James Gilliland is an author. He's a minister, transpersonal intuitive counselor. He is a visionary and founder of the Sattva Sanctuary, the Self-Mastery Earth Institute, it's called, and ESETI, Enlightened Contact with Extraterrestrial Intelligence. His many, many books include A Reunion with Source, Becoming Gods 2, and the soon-to-be-released Ultimate Soul Journey. He's also featured in two videos, Project Contact and The Keys to Utopia. After a near-death experience himself, James was expanded into what he calls interdimensional mind. This greater awareness brought him into a greater understanding of the vast interdimensional multiverses in which we all live. We are not alone in the universe, he says. There's a greater family of man. It is interstellar, interdimensional, not limited to our own time flow as we know it. Tonight on Coast to Coast, back by popular demand, James Gilliland. Hello, James. How are you?
Great. How you doing?
We're planning the trip.
All right.
We're coming.
We're ready.
We're figuring out the itinerary and how to get there from Los Angeles, and we shall make it.
Actually, I'm in Los Angeles right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're hiding somewhere.
A few blocks away from you.
Don't come here. You may bring something, because not all these aliens that you encounter, I bet, are friendly, are they?
Well, you know, the vast majority that I've encountered have been friendly. They've been very, very spiritually and technologically advanced beings. There are a small group of them that aren't. You know, that have, you might say, their own agenda.
Have you stumbled into them?
Yeah, I have.
I thought so. We'll talk a little bit about that, James. Hey, James, on the website, coasttocoastam.com, which is linked up with your website, of course, eseti.org, some incredible things. We're going to listen to a clip, by the way, a UFO clip later on tonight, when you tell me to, what could very well be a beam ship under the direction of what you say are aliens. But Lex and you have done a great job pointing out some great pictures of things. I mean, there must be so much going on out there. It's incredible, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's, the land itself is on a vortex. It's a very, very high-energy place. And anybody that comes up there, it alters you. It alters your consciousness being there for a while. And most people that are spiritual adepts, you know, we've had yogis and lamas and people of that nature come up there, and they were just completely blown away by the energy. They got all excited.
What have you been working on lately?
You know, I've got two projects I'm working on right now. One of the major projects, we're calling it the Aquarius Project. We're building a two-story building. And the bottom building is a lab where we're going to be putting together a lot of these incredible new healing technologies that we've come into contact
with. Mm-hmm.
And the upper story will be for teaching and, you know, doing a lot of seminars and conferences and things of that nature. But we, right now, with this water project, the Aquarius Water Project, with the crystallized oxygen in it, it's just taken off like crazy. We've got doctors and hospitals. We're teaching doctors how to use these new healing technologies, and they're just getting incredible results. But
Well, now, when you talk about new healing technologies, mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, what it is that it's very, very simple. There's a lot of research behind it. There's 35 years research behind it. Dr. Otto Warburg brought this up. He's, a double Nobel Prize winner. But they realized that most of the pathogens, the viruses and bacteria that are harmful to the human body are all anaerobic. And they can't exist in a highly oxygenated system. And they even found out that cancer is anaerobic as well. So when you increase the oxygen levels of the blood and raise the pH, it makes an environment where these things just can't exist. So, you know, building on that research, there's a lot of new technologies that are coming out concerning water that have water that hydrates the body much better than regular water because it's been completely restructured and has a different spin on it, you might say.
I had a guest on a couple months ago, James, that claims that water is alive.
It is alive. It's definitely.
You believe that too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what we call this, basically a living water. And one of the problems with with the Earth right now, and that's one of the messages that the ETs are very, very concerned about, is the condition of the environment. And just, I think 100 years ago we had a 35% oxygen level, and now we're down. We're below 17%.
Are you kidding?
No, it's not looking good.
What's caused that to happen?
Well, we've got over 50 dead zones in the ocean, one of them 700 miles wide, where there's nothing. There's no plankton, no fish. It's void. And, you know, a lot of it is the petroleum products, the radiation, all the chemicals and the pollutants and everything that are being dumped into the ocean and coming down from the air. It's basically right now their main concern is that we're on a downward spiral, and this civilization is not sustainable the way it's going.
Okay, I want to come back to this, and I want to come back to some of the things that the ETs have told you, because it's important now, because I want to find out if they're getting involved to try to help things out or not. But to some people, James, who do not know you, tell me a little bit about your background, because something very provocative happened to you, very profound, a long time ago. Why don't you fill us in on all that?
Well, about 25 years ago now, I had a near-death experience where I drowned, and I went through the tunnel of light that everybody talks about, and connected with what I call the source. And it was completely changed my life, because I was very materialistic before that. I had a commercial real estate business and several people working for me, and I just was not on any kind of a spiritual path whatsoever. But it turned everything around for me, and it took me quite a few years to get my feet back on the ground and understand the experience, because it was so profound.
When this happened to you, did you feel as if, or did you come away, James, with a sense that there are other dimensions, other worlds, or was it just this spiritual awakening that you got?
Well, what happened was the original experience, I went through the tunnel, like they say, and I ended up in this golden white light, a pure consciousness, you might say. And it was like I was a part of this consciousness. I was a part of this light, but there was a greater light surrounding me, or consciousness, that I was having a conversation with. And it was the most loving, blissful, joyous experience, and security beyond words. There's no words to describe the experience. And so from that point on, I realized that there is, you know, a source or creator, whatever you want to call it. Everybody has a different word for it. And my whole image changed of that source as to what it is, because we're given all these false images, and unfortunately a lot of the religions push the fear and the guilt and the unworthiness and all of the you might say thought forms and things of that nature that actually keep you from reuniting with the source.
Well, was it this awakening that somehow drawed you to the extraterrestrials? Or was something else involved?
It was. What happened was, I was on a spiritual journey. I was not, I just accepted the fact that it's a big universe, it's multidimensional, and there's got to be something out there. And if we're the best creation has to offer, it's a pretty sorry universe. You know, that was the way I thought about it before. But after the experience, I was on a very spiritual experience, and I studied for over 20 years with lamas and yogis and
20 years?
Exactly, with almost every kind of training I could get my hands on, inner sensitivity training. I went through the Tibetan Foundation and the teachings of the Inner Christ. I went through all these programs, just learning, you know, more and more about techniques and things on how to recreate that experience and, you know, kind of get that connection solidified with the source that I had in the near-death experience.
Well, now, in your particular case, out in the Trout Lake in Washington, do you think it's that region that is attracting these visitations, these sightings, or is it you?
I think what happened there, it had a long history. It has a very long history of UFO activity. There's the Native Americans are very aware of the UFO activity in the area. We actually have the tribal police on record and a lot of the elders there. We've gone up and had interviews with them and videotaped them. But actually, Kenneth Arnold, I believe it was in 47,
mm-hmm.
he said that he lost sight of the ships when they descended on the western slopes of Mount Adams, which is exactly where the ranch is, or the sanctuary. So that was one of the original people involved in it. And after that, Dr. J. Allen Hynek was involved, David Akers, Greg Long, Bill Vogel.
All the heavyweights.
Exactly. They've all done research out there, and they've said that there's everything going on there, from abductions to contacts to metallic craft to light spheres that are very inquisitive, that seem to be under some kind of intelligent control, that follow vehicles, appear, shoot across the sky at breakneck speed, do right angle turns, stop, and exhibit all kinds of behavior of some kind of intelligent craft.
How many different types of extraterrestrials have attempted to make contact with you, or that perhaps you have witnessed?
I've witnessed probably, I would say, around seven.
Seven different kinds?
Exactly. Yeah, seven that were more humanoid.
But different?
A little bit different. Much more.
I mean, each was different from the next one of these seven.
Some were very close. There's a few that are very close. When you get into the some people call them Pleiadian or Plejaran people, and the Lyrian people, and the Orion system in that area, those are all similar. They're all from the basic root seed, you might say.
Have you seen any really bizarre looking ones?
Yeah, actually, I have. I've seen some very.
What do they look like? Kind of paint me a picture.
I've seen some very small beings that were extremely powerful.
How small? I mean, like leprechauns?
Yeah, I would say maybe three feet tall, I'd say, somewhere around that range.
I've always wondered about leprechauns, and I've always wondered if they were indeed extraterrestrials, and that's what those in Irish times really, really had seen.
You know, I would not be surprised. There's a lot of ancient tales about the inner earth and the interior and these little beings that come up from there, and it all ties into, you know, the nature kingdom, you might say. So it's very hard for people to understand this phenomenon, because when you get into interdimensional mind, you've got all these different levels of existence, and there is a level of existence where these fairies and these... We actually have a picture of a fairy on our website that a guest took, and it's just a phenomenal picture. But it looks like a fairy or an angel. You can make it whatever you want.
But do you think it's an extraterrestrial?
I think it's of a different kingdom. I think it's part of the nature kingdom.
All right, maybe another interdimension then.
Yes, and it comes from another dimension.
Okay. Have you seen any hideous-looking extraterrestrials or beings?
Actually, I have. I've seen maybe one that had almost like a pig head. There's a movie, I think it was called The Fifth Element. And they had these kind of really ugly-looking ones, like a pig head. And I've seen those, and that was one of the not-so-pleasant experiences I've had.
Why? What happened?
They're very aggressive. They have their own agenda, you might say. They're not in the highest and best good of humanity in the earth. And there's some grays. And I haven't had any encounters with any of the reptilians everybody talks about, but I've heard that there are both good reptilians and some negative reptilians as well.
Have you ever been taken aboard or anything like that?
I had some experiences as a kid, and a lot of people call them abductions, but I think it was more of a willing participant type thing. And they were, the experiences I had were all very benevolent, very healing and teaching oriented.
Were they dreamlike, or do you actually believe they were occurring and happening to you?
One was very, very physical, and it was undeniably physical. The second one I had that was pretty incredible was, the only way I can explain it, it was kind of funny how it happened, but I was in the bathtub actually meditating, and I was very kind of tired of all the ships flying over not really knowing what it's all about and wanting to have some proof about, you know, this is a real physical event here. And And I asked for it. I just said, I want to know, you know, what this is all about, what my connection is to this, and the big picture, what's going on. And right after I said that, a beam came right through the wall of golden energy. And the beam hit me square in the chest, and then three gold balls of energy came down the beam, hit me in the chest. And then the next thing you know, I was standing on a ship. I was taken out of my body, because we have a body within the body, like a spirit body.
Right, your astral body.
Exactly, and they have a technology where they can take you out of your body, bring you on board to a ship that's a non-physical ship. It's more of a plasma ship.
All right, and your physical body remained behind, right?
Exactly, and they can have a conversation with you and teach you things. And then when they put you back in the body, it's so profound that you know it's not a dream. It's just... It's too intense of an experience, but when it happened to me, I asked, it was a woman that I connected with, and I have pictures of her on the website. They're actually drawings that were done. But the experience was just phenomenal. I asked her what, she had a bathing suit cap on, that's the only way I can explain it, like a headdress with two gold bars above it. And I asked her what the headdress was about, and she said it was a spiritual form of technology they used to initiate people and to wake people up. And then I asked her what the three gold balls of energy were that hit me in the chest. And she told me that what was returned to me was my previous knowledge and awareness.
That you somehow forgot?
Yeah, we all forget. You know, we're all eternal beings, and we've been all over this galaxy. And we just don't remember because we...
Some of us can't remember what we did last week.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of people running around and they think they're just a body and a personality, and that's what they are because that's all they've chosen to be is their reality.
Well, have you found in your experience that there are some entities or ETs that are trying to help this planet and that there are others who have their own agenda?
What I've experienced is, in the past, the first contacts were not so benevolent. There were some benevolent ones, but there was a lot of negativity going on. You might say low-level contacts, and it was also connected with the government. There were some connections with the government as well. And even the government realized that they made a mistake by aligning with this group, and it all went kind of awry. And now they're realizing that they probably should have worked with the benevolent ones. And you know, we've had people coming up to the ranch, and we knew who they were. And you know, they were very high up in the alphabet agencies, you might say. And they're just checking to make sure that we were, you know, hooking up with the right kind of beings, you might say.
All right. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more of this distinguished James Gilliland and some of the things that occur between the various ETs, like the Greys, like the Pleiadians, maybe the Zetas. We'll find out. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
I'll keep holding on. George Norrie.
Yes, you are, and my guest tonight is James Gilliland. Get up to his website, ECETI.org, which is linked up with coasttocoastam.com. Simple enough, and we'll be back with James and talk about really the differences between these ETs that he's had some experience with, because there's a message here behind some of that madness. James Gilliland, my guest. James, let's talk about the difference of some of these entities. I've always felt that they have agendas. Some would like to help, some would not. In your experience, let's take, for example, the traditional grays. Uh-huh. Are they good ETs or not good?
I think it's kind of a gray area, if you don't mind me making a pun. But I think there are some that aren't benevolent, and then there are some that are just more like scientists, you might say, that are experimenting. And it's my understanding that what happened with the Greys is they went after knowledge, just pure knowledge, and they bred emotions out of their race. And in doing so, they made a very serious mistake, because they have tremendous heads and very powerful minds, but they don't have the emotions, and the life force comes through the emotions. Love is the life force that holds everything together. And unfortunately, because of that, their bodies are very frail, and because all they care about is knowledge. They're just after knowledge, and they've almost given up on the physical body.
Is that why, like, a Buddhist monk is, you know, he's physically, they're not very strong. I mean, mentally they are, my gosh. They probably levitate and do all kinds of things. But is that the same kind of thing?
No, it's different, because if a monk is doing it right, they're plugging into the life force. And if they realize that God is a feeling and not an intellectual understanding, then they're doing it right, and they're feeding the body, and they're actually nourishing the body, because they're tapping into the source, you might say.
What are these beings more concerned about, our physical or our spiritual welfare?
Well, it depends on which group. I mean, one group, like the Greys, were here for genetics, because they were trying to breed emotions back into their race, and that's why they were doing all the abductions.
And where do you think they are from?
They're from the Zeta Reticuli area.
Okay, so they are the traditional Zetas, and they generally look like that. Might there be other grays from other parts of this universe, or do you think it's just primarily the Zeta Reticuli?
I think they originated there, but there's a lot of little robot-type grays, you might say, the smaller ones. And I think several races actually use them, because they're more of a little biological robot.
Mm-hmm.
And they use them to gather data, gather information, gather, monitor things.
They're like little workers.
Exactly, like little worker bees.
All right, so the Zetas are there doing what they do. Do they get involved in what we do on this planet, or do they just kind of sit back and watch it all unfold?
Well, they've been very involved, and they've done a lot of experiments, not just genetic, but emotional experiments. They tamper with people trying to figure things out. Because one of the things is they don't have emotions, so they have no reference points, and they didn't realize all the emotional trauma that they're creating with a lot of their experiments, you know. But my experience with them is I don't really want to work with them or deal with them, because they have their own agenda, and they're just on a whole different purpose, you might say, than where I'm going. I always found out a lot of them don't always tell the truth. They just want to see what happens after they say this or that. You know, they're just kind of observing our emotional responses.
With what is going on out there at Trout Lake in Washington, it seems to be a haven for the unusual. I mean, because you've got orbs, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've got the visitations from UFOs. You've got all kinds of things going on. The place is almost like a magnet, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's an incredible place because the a lot of people come up there with their cameras, and it gets caught on digital or just even the little throwaway cameras with 400-speed film. It doesn't matter. You just shoot, especially at nighttime. If you shoot with the flash, you'll get all kinds of anomalous light forms on your film.
I mean, we've got some pictures of an orb up on the website now that's linked up with yours, and I guess when this happens, you can't see them with the naked eye, can you?
Not very many people can. I know there's, if you've done your spiritual homework and you've opened up your clairvoyant abilities, you can see them. That's how we get a lot of the photos. You'll see in some of the photographs, I'm actually pointing at the orbs and I'm saying, shoot right there. And there's a huge column of orbs coming down. And we've done a lot of experimentation with this because we take before and after pictures before invoking, you know, the orbs and bringing them in. And the before pictures, there's nothing there. And then we go out and it's just through meditation, you just fill yourself up with love and send it out. The orbs come. They're like little love magnets. It's real interesting. They're very much attracted to the feminine energy, it seems like, much more than the masculine.
Well, what do you think they are? Do you think they're spirits, energy, just something like pure science? What do you think they are?
I think they're different. There's different kinds of orbs that some of it is a projection of consciousness. They're light spheres. Some of them are actually entities. Some are nature spirits. They take different forms and different shapes, and we've had all kinds of them. You know, some are of extremely high technology that's so far beyond anything we can imagine. It's a way of observing, you know, people from a very high spiritual being.
Fascinating, though, James, though, that you see a lot of orbs near cemeteries.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they're tied into the spirits or death for some reason.
Oh, what they are is, you know, what I believe is that there's different orbs that come from different levels of consciousness. And there are orbs that are, you might say, the soul or the spirit would move out of the body as a light sphere. And I think what people are doing is picking up that light sphere, you know, of the being. It's like a discarnate spirit, you might say.
Yeah, but they're popping all over the place, aren't they?
Exactly. The veils are coming down, and that's what's happening at the ranch there. The veils between worlds or between dimensions are so thin that you can actually see these things. Some people actually see them with their naked eye, but you can get them very easily on any kind of film.
What makes you think on the camera that it's not some distortion or some kind of light reflection or something like that?
Well, we've done all kinds of experiments. One, we've filmed them indoors. People say they're water spots or
like raindrops stuff. Or something.
So we've done it. We clean the lenses. They're very clean. We shoot outside. We do it before and after. There's no orbs. Then we take another shot after we do a nice meditation or bring a group together. And they love music. If you have people sitting around a campfire playing music or just having a good time, our children, they gather around children. But we do before and after pictures, and before there'll be nothing there in the field. And then when we go out and do our thing, the orbs all come in. So the other thing, too, is that people say that the water spot theory is so far out of any kind of reasonable mind, because what we have these orbs, and you can see them on the website, they're actually behind the trees coming through the trees and coming, you know, across the fields, and there's things in front of them. So they're some distance, some of them are some distance out there, and you can see them, branches, sometimes you see a fence post, you see something in front of the orb some distance away. So
they're never particularly large, though, James. They seem to be small little balls.
Oh, we have some huge orbs, some gigantic ones on the site. They're very, very big.
I mean, how would you know that would be an orb, though? To me, that might even be a UFO type.
Yeah, well, it very well could be. Some of them are, we have a pyramid building there, and when we do a lot of work there, or healing work or meditation work in the pyramid, what happens is we take photographs above the pyramid, and there's incredible light spheres above the pyramid that are, some I would say are 20 feet, 30 feet wide.
Because I've never seen, at least on pictures, mm-hmm. big orbs that are true orbs. I've always seen just these little tiny things all over the place.
Yeah, I have some of these pictures. I should put them up on the site. But, I mean, I can actually, when you come up, I'll show you every kind of orb you can imagine.
The things that are going on out there, is there anything there that particularly frightens you, or are you pretty calm with everything?
What's interesting with me is that I already died once, and so when you lose the fear of death, nothing really, really phases you.
And have you truly lost the fear of death now?
There's still a part of me that wants to live, that I'll always want to live and do whatever is necessary to.
You've got that survival mode, right?
Exactly, but there's no fear involved in it. It's, I find out you have to look at everything as just interesting. I don't get all excited about when I see these things, and I don't fear them either. It's just I take a real neutral position when I'm observing these things, because a lot of times if you start freaking out or flipping out or you get fearful, the experience stops.
Why you? Why contact with you? Why information to you? What is so special about James Gilliland that they are in contact with you? Or are they doing this with a lot of people?
They're actually doing it with a lot of people. With me, I think what happened with me was the drowning opened the door. The beginning of it opened the door. I realized I also chose, before I even incarnated, to do this, because it was made known to me later. But I've always just felt it's just the right thing to do, that it's time for humanity to open up to a greater awareness and to realize that we're not alone in the universe. And the Earth needs help right now from higher levels because of the condition of the consciousness here right now on the planet and the environment as well.
You know, it would seem that with this, I don't know, it's almost like there's some kind of architectural form going on here, if this is indeed real, mm-hmm. That there's some kind of plan afoot.
There is.
What is it?
Well, the Earth is evolving. It's moving. The whole solar system, you might say, is moving into a new place in the universe. And it has to do with it's just that it's a part in time that we're moving through where we're moving into a new place and where time is actually speeding up. There's a lot more usable energy here. It's a vibrational quickening, you might say.
Well, how do you know that they're not spirits as opposed to extraterrestrials?
Well, it's one way. It's hard to explain because some are spirits, some are extraterrestrials. It's all going on at once, and people try to pigeonhole this experience into one group. And when you go into interdimensional mind, you realize there's a lot more than one thing going on here. And you know, it's not all great, it's not all positive, but it's not all negative either. And I think we've gone through a real negative phase in our evolutionary process, and we're moving more towards the light, more toward a much more positive phase. And it's like the low-level contacts, the abductions, all those things are phasing out right now, and they're becoming more of a teaching experience or a learning experience. And the other higher, more benevolent contacts are happening everywhere right now.
James, we've been told that the Zetas were telling us Planet X is coming on May 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were told that the Zetas changed the date to June 1st.
Yeah.
And now, what the heck? So, I mean, are you in contact with Zetas as well? Do they speak through you? Have they told you anything about a Planet X?
You know, I I don't communicate with him, to be honest with you.
So your voice doesn't change or you don't go into a different mode?
No, I've experienced them, and I found out that we did not link up in consciousness because I work a lot better with the ones that have more of a love vibration. They're highly evolved beings, and it just doesn't. They actually give me a headache whenever I come near one because their mental energies aren't in sync with me. So I've kind of warned people about a lot of that the Zetas don't always tell the truth, and a lot of times they're just doing emotional experiments, and I don't really trust them as far as, you know, what their program is.
So you think it's possible they wanted to scare the hell out of us in order to just test us?
It's a strong possibility. It's
kind of devious, James.
Yeah, that's why I don't deal with them. You know, I never know what they're up to. I haven't had my dealings. You know, I don't like to judge or condemn anybody, but all I can say is from my own experience, it wasn't a very pleasant one, and I didn't like what I was feeling, and I broke off the connection and called in the more benevolent ones to move them out of my space.
So you actually believe it's very possible what they could have done was concocted this Planet X story through some other sources and people in order to create this whatever they're doing?
Well, I believe there is a Planet X. It's not time yet. It's not going to be coming in for quite some time. I think around 2007 it might be coming in. But even when it does come in, it's not going to have the effects that people are afraid of. Mainly because there's a lot of shielding going on. There's a lot of intervention, you might say, on our behalf. And also, too, the trajectory when it does come through, the planets, unless it hits our atmosphere, is not going to do a lot of damage.
I mean, but had they ever communicated to you as well that there was a Planet X and it's rolling around pretty soon, did they deceive you?
Oh, the Grays?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't ever communicate with them, so they didn't have a chance to, you might say.
But, I mean, you know of them, right?
Yes.
You've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they never communicated with you in a direct way?
Well, it's like a neighbor, you know, a neighbor that you don't trust or whatever. You don't go knocking on their door. You just let them be. You know, you don't go down to that, you know, that end of the street, you might say.
Have you ever seen any direct landings out there where you are in Washington?
Yes, we have. We actually have them on film.
Tell me about that.
We've got several landings on the mountain, on Mount Adams itself, and we have them coming, starting at the very top of the mountain, coming over the top, moving all over the mountain, landing in several places, and actually morphing from one brilliant light to three lights, and then back to one again, and then they jump to the other side. And they'll jump around the mountain, covering miles in just, you know, seconds. It's amazing. And we went up to the area where this was all going on, and there's steep lava cliffs, there's glaciers. There's no way you could get any kind of a vehicle or snowmobile or anything over this terrain. It's just impossible. And the light was so brilliant coming from the mountain that the people that analyzed it said that it's the lumens it would take to, or the candle power, you might say, there's nothing really mobile that could produce that kind of candle power coming from the mountain.
All right, stay with us. Next hour, we'll continue chatting with James Gilliland, and we're going to also play a clip of what could very well be an unidentified flying object, and we'll have James explain what it is and how it might have been obtained. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.
your jury, call the Wildcard Line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George Norrie toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Okay, in a moment, we're going to play the UFO sound clip, and we'll have James Gilliland tell us a little bit about how it was obtained. Don't go away. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, James Gilliland, my guest. James, let's listen to this sound clip, but set up the stage for me a little bit. Where was it obtained?
You know, the sound clip was actually taken over Portland State University, and it was taken by a very good friend of mine named Troy, and he woke up about 2 o'clock in the morning, I believe, and felt a real strong presence. He said his whole body was tingling. He looked out the window and saw a brilliant light just hovering over Portland State University. So he filmed this light, and it was strange because the noise was, or the pulse was directed straight towards his camera, and it picked up on the camera. And the light, as he was filming it, would actually dim or brighten up along with this pulse, and at the same time this pulse would speed up, the light would speed up and follow the pulse, and the light would pulse as well, you know, in synchronicity with the sound.
How many other people saw the object at the time?
Actually, it was on the news. They had it on the local news, and they interviewed several people that saw it, and other people filmed it as well.
So it was all over the place up there on the west.
Exactly. We're getting incredible news coverage in our area, but then it's almost isolated. It's amazing. We've had ABC come out, Fox News, Evening Magazine. A lot of these people have come out and have done very favorable interviews, you know, and had experiences themselves after they saw all the what was going on there. But the what's interesting is that all of a sudden it just gets localized. It's much like the Phoenix Lights over Phoenix,
mm-hmm,
Arizona.
Absolutely.
You know, thousands of people saw the Phoenix Lights. They saw the ships actually hover there for a long time. You know, looked like one of them landed, and then they left, and they went straight up and took off. These weren't flares. They didn't act anything like a flare. And then a giant triangle ship was spotted as well.
All right, let's take a listen to it, James. And everyone else, stay, keep your ear close to your radio or your computer. Very low rumbling sound there, James.
Yeah, it's not coming over my headset. I don't know why. I hope it's coming
over. Oh, yeah, it's coming in loud and clear over here.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's almost, I hate to say this, but we get a lot of calls from people who hear a low humming sound. They think it might be digging, for example, tunnels or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds very close to what I think some of them are describing.
It does. It's a... It sounds to me almost, a lot of people say it sounds like a cat, almost like a cat purring, a cosmic cat, but it's just too deep.
All right, we're going to play it one more time here. Let's do it again. That's kind of eerie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could he hear that with his ears, or... did it sound better once it was recorded?
we had to do a lot of work on it because it's funny, he was actually listening to Coast on the radio. And so we had to do a lot of work on it. Jim Delatosa with Village Labs did a lot of work on it to pull this sound out. You could hear it in the background, and they had to run it through a lot of filters to pull out the show. Actually, Linda Moulton Howe was on the show at the time doing doing an interview. It was pretty interesting, but you could hear this ship in the background, and what was interesting is the pulse, that deep pulse, corresponded exactly with the ship itself, with the pulse.
What do you think it is? Some kind of propulsion system?
You know, what's interesting, it was hovering over the universe, I mean, over the university
there, yeah.
At 2 o'clock in the morning. And because I've had a long telepathic contact with some of these beings, I asked them what they were doing over the university at 2 o'clock in the morning, and what they told me was higher learning. So they're working with people on a dream state, on an inspirational state, to prepare them for, you might say, a grand reunion in the future. It's almost like on a subconscious level, people are having dreams and experiences and getting prepared so they won't go into shock or flip out when they start seeing these ships coming on a grander scale, you might say.
How many ships might come, James?
I think eventually there's going to be a time where you're going to see them everywhere. There's going to be no denial. They're just going to be parked and sitting. And
I mean, will you see them if you look up into the sky? So you're going to see like hundreds of them up there?
More like...
I mean, it'll look like an invasion, won't it?
At one point, it may look that way. They have to do a lot of work concerning the planet and some shielding and some other things. So I think there's going to be... It's already increased incredibly because they had a gigantic ship fly over Canada, and I don't know how many witnesses they had, probably 250 witnesses documented now, and more than that, but just the documented ones that saw it. It was enormous, and they've had them, they had 12 ships fly right down the New Jersey Turnpike, you know. They had the sheriffs, all the police, everybody talking about what they saw. You know, and then you take the Phoenix Lights, the ships flying over Phoenix. They're making themselves known on a grand scale, and we can't, you know, say this isn't happening. I was amazed. I saw one of your guests, I guess, from SETI. They seem to follow me, because when I go on these TV shows and radio shows, all of a sudden I see a guy from SETI following me, saying that, well, we haven't seen anything, it's not out there. These things don't exist, and what I thought was very interesting is one of them said that, well, with all of our spy satellites, we would know if there was any UFO activity on the planet. And in the statement right before that, he said we're a civilian operation, we're not tied in with the government, and we don't get government funding and things of that nature. Well, how do you know what all the spy satellites are seeing if you aren't tied in with the government?
How do you know that all these UFOs aren't here to do some kind of unfriendly corporate takeover?
Yeah, I don't know. You know,
it could be tricking you, James.
Oh, it is possible. I mean,
so you'll admit that?
I think anything's possible, but when you reach a certain level of awareness, you can sense intent and purpose, and you can sense the vibration, you might say, of a particular entity, and it's very hard to be misled. If you are not awake or aware, you can be misled.
Well, there's no doubt about that, but that sound, I mean, when you hear that, it's got an eerie feeling to it. It almost gives you shivers when you try to picture a UFO up there making that kind of noise. Are you getting reports at all out by your neck of the woods in Washington of these massively shaped, triangular-shaped objects?
Actually, we have so many of those on film, you wouldn't believe it. We had... We actually had C. SETI, Dr. Greer's group, out.
Sure.
And he did a training seminar at the ranch. And we had four incredible triangles come over.
Man-made, do you think, or extraterrestrial?
These particular ones, I believe, are extraterrestrial. They're just too big. They're enormous. And they're we had one of them. We had three different groups out there. We had Greer's group. and two other groups that weren't part of Greer's group, and all three of them witnessed it, and we had at least two cameras on some of them. And these things are enormous. We have a clip. I believe we have a clip on the site. Some of the triangles are on the videos that I have on the site. But these are... Now, a lot of people are saying, well, that's this Navy satellite. That's a secret satellite, and all we're seeing is these three satellites tethered together or whatever. But these are definitely not satellites. They're enormous. When they come in, they make turns. They make complete... We have one making a complete right-angle turn, which is not a satellite. One comes in, and the whole nose lifts up, and it's almost standing up when it goes by, and then they just phase out. And I've seen them at treetop level fly over, and they had form. They were physical. They had three lights. They had a light on each point. But when it flew over me, it had a bank of red lights that started flashing as it flew over. And the eerie thing about these is they make no sound whatsoever.
None. Nothing.
And something that enormous to fly over you making no sound, it you think you're losing it. You can't even believe you saw it because it just makes no sense to the rational mind when you see something fly over that large. And then you watch it phase out and become a non-physical object because they just phase out as they move on. So...
And you would think that that kind of an object would make that kind of humming sound.
Exactly, would make something. I think they were actually doing some work there, some energy work. They're doing a lot of work right now with the grid system, you might say, the energetics of Earth. And when you understand the higher physics and how that all works, it's everything has a frequency, you might say. One of the things the Palladians told me when I asked them, I said, can you sum it up in maybe one or two sentences why you're here? And they told me, they said basically because they are our ancient ancestors, and they went through their trials and tribulations and you know, almost blew themselves up and destroyed their civilization. And they said that we're on the edge of that as well. And the main thing they said that they were concerned with was releasing the past. Because we're all living in the past. We're carrying these old wounds and traumas and need for revenge and these warlike attitudes and emotions and things of that nature that we need to let go of. And they can actually do that with a form of technology, you might say, which is beyond anything we can imagine, but it has to do with frequencies. Because even the physical Earth itself has energies that are psychometrized into the land itself, where there's been wars and disasters and things of that nature. So they can actually release that through a special form of technology, you might say.
Do you think, James, if we were in the midst of a nuclear holocaust, that they would step in and stop it?
They won't allow that.
They would not allow that.
They've made it very clear that that's not going to be allowed.
The wars can happen, but that they wouldn't allow.
No, they wouldn't allow that because that actually affects other dimensions. It creates very serious problems on many levels, and they have their people here too. They have bases here too. And there's other civilizations that are on this planet right now that have chosen to avoid interaction with, you know, surface dwellers, you might say, that would be affected by a lot of this. So they have a limit. There is a limit to allowing, and they'll only let us go so far in our evolutionary process. We can only go so far into the negative, and that's it.
You continue to get new footage, video footage, of that area, don't you?
We have some incredible new footage. We have some footage that the scientists right now are analyzing it, and I call it the smoking bazooka because it's a plasma ship. We had a wonderful person by the name of Leah came and donated a nice Sony 3-chip camera.
And the makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Exactly. And I had a little $200 Sony camera. You know, it's kind of sad because I've actually outgunned both NASA and SETI as far as evidence with a $200 Sony camcorder, you know. And but now we have some pretty good quality equipment now with some digital cameras and this Sony 3-chip.
Now, the other entities, or ETs, that are not Greys, the Greys being the Zetas,
mm-hmm.
do they have a common agenda, or are they all separate?
They have a, there's a consortium of the benevolent ones, and they do have a common agenda. They have universal guidelines that they agree to and go by. And it's very aligned with service-oriented, you might say, because when you evolve to a certain level of evolution, you shift into service. You serve creation, and you see the Creator within all creation. And it's just part of the evolutionary process. And they see us as, you know, a part of creation that's in trouble right now.
Do they have the ability to look into the future, James?
Yes, they do. They have time travel. They have all kinds of capability.
Do they tell you some of the things that are out there?
They've given some very severe warnings of events that are on the books right now that can be changed.
Like?
Well, one of the things, I believe they pretty much summed it up in a U.S. Today article where they say preparing for a possible pandemic. And, you know, we're having these biologicals, you know, that are, unfortunately, most of them are man-made that are being released. And they're affecting, you know, there's pneumonia viruses and bacteria. There's all kinds of things where a lot of experiments, you might say, have been gotten away or not gone the way they're supposed to, and some perpetuated things going on. But it's not a pretty picture. They warned years ago about playing with the biologicals and tinkering, you know, in these areas. But, you know, there's some very serious things that we're looking at right now, because the path that we've taken, you know, getting down to basics, your food should be your medicine. And our food right now is becoming so synthetic and so processed that it's taxing the immune system. Our immune system's on overload. You add all the chemicals and the biologicals we're exposed to, and we're basically sitting ducks as a civilization. And we need to get back to a more natural way of life and eating. You know, we're organic beings, and we need to be eating more organic foods, getting what we need out of the foods. We need to get away from the synthetics. The healing techniques and modalities have to go back to a more natural way. The synthetics aren't working. They're degenerating, actually, as we speak, because these viruses and bacteria are mutating, and a lot of the antibiotics aren't working anymore. So there's a lot of new technologies that are here right now that are the solution to this, that could avoid these epidemics and these outbreaks that are...
Well, I just hope it's not a cookbook like we knew in the Twilight Zone, To mm-hmm. Serve Man. Remember that one? You ever see that, James?
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite episodes.
That was pretty interesting.
I mean, how do we know that their plans to help us may not indeed be... I mean, what if they're man-eaters, for crying out loud?
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing we need to realize is that basically if they wanted to serve us up as human pilaf and take us over, they would have done it a long time ago.
How do we know they're not doing it? Well, I mean, there are a lot of cases of people disappearing, aren't there? Nobody knows where they went.
Yeah, there is some cases of that nature, and there are people that seem to have a finger on that. The ones that, you know, what I'm saying is that I'm not that much focused on the negative or the low-level contacts. I think it's much smaller than the benevolent ones coming in, and once we rise to the occasion, there's a lot of protection that comes with the benevolent beings aligning with them, you know, choosing peace. So as long as we continue to, you know, be warlike primitive creatures, we're going to continue to play in that arena and have those kind of experiences. We need to move beyond that.
All right, when we come back, I tell you what, we'll open up phone lines to give you an opportunity to chat with James Gilliland tonight. I'll play that UFO sound clip again. Yes, to those of you emailing me, we'll do it again. And so get ready for that. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.
with George Norrie, call the Wild Card Line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George Norrie toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Okay, let's listen again to that UFO sound clip, the clip that was apparently of a UFO that was hovering over Oregon State University. Now listen to this low rumbling sound. It is absolutely fascinating. Imagine looking up at this thing. In a moment, we'll be back with your phone calls and James Gilliland. Don't go away. Welcome back. I'm George Norrie. James Gilliland, my guest, your phone calls as well. James, of everything that has happened to you out there in Washington, what would you categorize as the most fascinating, the most compelling that has ever happened? You only can pick one.
Just one. I would have to say the unfortunately, the one I talked about already was the most intense experience that I had, where I was taken aboard the ship.
Yes. Astrally, I guess. Physical body left behind.
Yeah, now I had a physical one as well, where I actually went physically. And that was a Pleiadian encounter. And it was a little more physical, but it was less eventful, because the other event completely changed my life.
All right, let's go to the calls. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on with James Gilliland. Hi there.
Hi. I have two questions.
Sure, go ahead.
Just quick. The first one is not as important to me, but it is looking for clarification of the chronology of Mr. Gilliland's experiences.
All right, let's go one at a time, all right?
Okay. I'm a little confused about, he said that he had his near-death experience as an adult, but then the experience he just talked about where he went aboard a ship physically, I think he was saying that happened when he was a child. So I wanted some clarification on that, but I have a much more important question
okay.
that I'll hold
sure
on
thing.
For.
Go ahead, James. You want to touch on that first?
Yeah, that actually happened 2 years ago. I also did have some experiences as a child as well, but the one where I was taken out of body and on the ship was just 2 years ago. We had actually campers there on the ranch, and they saw the ship, and they were camping in their own little camper van there, and they said the whole van was shaking during the experience.
Wow.
Okay, what was your other question?
Okay, first of all, James, I really appreciate your positive spin on things. It's been very reassuring. There have been a lot of guests on Coast to Coast who have talked about rather a dire future for us between
doom, I would call it.
that's a pretty good word. It seems like the only ones who are going to be left surviving are the ones who are underground, and there are those of us who are very spiritually oriented and who are very much a part of the living earth and keeping her clean and keeping the energy right, but we're not moving underground. So what's going to happen to us? Are we just supposed to, you know, count on the next dimension?
Well, there's always hope. We have the tools and the technologies right now to turn this planet around. They've been disseminated. There's several physicists I'm working with, and they have the fuel of energy. They're pretty unlimited. They have the ability to end most of the diseases. There's technology that's been around for quite some time, like the RIPE technology, and a lot of these other technologies that have been banned and been suppressed. But they're here right now, and it's wonderful because California actually has opened the door to allow a lot of these alternative healing modalities to come forward now and allowing doctors to utilize them in their practices. So there's a lot of new legislation coming out that allows this to happen. The next phase would be to get some legislation that would stop the suppression of the fuelless energies and the other zero-point technologies, because they're here on the planet right now.
I would love to see it happen. It's unfortunate, James, that there really just doesn't seem to be any tremendous thrust to get something like that done.
Yeah, it's sad because it's, you know, the big money people. Unfortunately, you've got the, you know, petroleum industry in office. You've got the pharmaceutical industry and the war industry, and those three biggies are running things right now. And so people wonder why, you know, why we don't have the fuelless energies. Well, that's a no-brainer, you know, there. But then the next question they ask, well, how come we don't have the cure for all these diseases? Well, you know, we can't really bring out these cures because, you know, the cancer industry is the second largest industry next to the petroleum industry. So I mean, there's it all has to do with money and greed and capitalizing at the expense
money and greed,
of humanity,
that does it.
And the earth. And until we can shift that mindset, until the people rise up, the leaders will follow the people. And when the people put enough pressure on the leaders and demand that we move into a more peaceful, more clean environment and start focusing on the universal principles that are necessary for a healthy society and environment, we're going to continue on this downward spiral. So it's up to the people to make a stand. And there's incredible amount of, you might say, intervention that can come from a lot of different levels that can avoid a lot of these events that do look very gloom and doom right now, because that's what is on the books. It doesn't have to go that way. We can change it if enough people rise up. You know, actually, this show right now has the potential to redirect consciousness on a grand scale.
Well, and we've tried it a little bit with a few experiments. It seems to work.
Exactly, it does. If all the listeners would just take a moment and go within and just make a decision to act in the highest and best good of humanity and the earth, and, you know, regain their integrity and focus on that and put that out in the universe, you would see incredible things happen. And get behind the leaders that are calling for this, you know, that want to turn this planet around, amazing things can happen. But it's not going to happen from the top down. It's going to have to happen from the bottom up.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us now. Hi.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I had a question for James, and it seems like he has an awful lot of experience talking to aliens and getting information from them. And I was just kind of curious if he had any practical knowledge given to him to do anything to benefit mankind right now, you know?
Yes.
I'll give you an example.
Go ahead.
Say, like, cheap and efficient way to desalinization of water, or perhaps environmentally friendly air scrubbers to purify our atmosphere.
Well, good questions and ideas. Where are you calling from, by the way?
Oh, I'm in Iowa right now.
Are you? Okay.
I'm going to New York.
All right, I'll let you listen on the radio there. And, James, your water technology, was that a gift from above?
This technology, actually, there are quite a few scientists and physicists that I'm working with that have these technologies, exactly what he's talking about. We can desalinate water. We can do it very efficiently and cheaply. One of the problems with the water desalinization is the energy output to do it. But when you bring in these new fuelless energy technologies in, it's not a problem anymore. The the pollution, the air pollution, everything, we have to just stop the greed and stop the forces that be that suppress these new energies, that, you know, and get the, and start supporting the people that have it, because, you know, all of these technologies have been disseminated already. They've been shared.
Pretty difficult to stop greed, James.
That is the, we can't, you know, one of the people I work with, an incredible person, he's, you know, he was saying that the only thing he can't heal right now is ignorance and the greed. And, you know, so basically there are a lot of technologies out there. There's even, like I was saying before, there's certain rife technologies. Well, they killed all these people.
Well, you know, Edgar Cayce, when he would be doing his prophetic readings, was given information of health, for example, and has come up with countless thousands of remedies for different ailments.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's almost like some kind of intervention from above, isn't it?
Exactly. And you know, all these things were organic. We're organic beings, and we have to be healed organically. We're not a motor. We're not a car. You don't treat it synthetically. So, you know, people have to realize is that the way we have to go back to, okay, what caused the cancer? What caused the disease? Look at the environmental factors, all the things around it. And we keep trying to stop the symptomatic, you know, problems through synthetics, and it doesn't work. We've got to clean up the environment. We've got to change the way we eat. We have to start eating more natural, wholesome foods. We have to, you know, get rid of the pesticides and the herbicides and all the other things that are carcinogenic out of our food. And there are technologies right now. One of the water technologies we're using right now actually strips the synthetics out of the body, the harmful synthetics, and it goes after viruses and bacteria because they can't live in a highly oxygenated system. So a lot of these technologies are here right now that can clean up the planet and clean up the body as well. But the main factor we keep running into is just pure greed. And
that's because it's cheap and almost free to do, right?
Well, if you take the nuclear industry, there's as much money in the toxic mess and the cleanup and the storage, as a lot more money in that than actually generating the electricity. So, you know, and the same people that made the mess are getting paid to clean up the mess. And so, do you think they want to stop the nuclear energy or bring in, I mean, there's multi-billion-dollar corporations involved here. So, this, you know, the same thing with the petroleum industry. Now, the problem is that the carbon dioxide levels are so high right now, the greenhouse effect is overheating the planet, and it's doing it on an extreme level. So if this continues, we're going to be burning up. And I think there was, 12,000 people just died in France due to a heat wave.
I know. That is an unbelievable number, too.
It is. And there's just, this is happening in a lot of places. The weather patterns are all screwed up right now. The jet streams have changed. They're getting, you know, flooding where there was never flooding before, and droughts in areas where there weren't droughts before.
Well, I say what's up is down, and what's down is up.
Exactly. And almost all of our agencies we depend upon are backwards. You know, they're doing it entirely the opposite of what we think they should be doing. So it's we've got to change the consciousness on this planet and redirect it on the upward spiral and start again adhering to the, you know, the universal principles that are necessary for a healthy society and environment if we are going to continue to evolve as a species. If we don't, this downward spiral that we're on right now, if we don't correct it right away, we're not going to be doing too well in the not too distant future.
Well, speaking of doing well, how close are you to the Mount St. Helens?
Mount Adams is quite a ways away. It's kind of on the foot of St. Helens, which is good because St. Helens is like the open valve.
I mean, if that ever went again, are you okay?
Oh, yeah, it just fertilizes everything. You know, volcanoes are natural.
As long as it doesn't fertilize you.
Yeah. You know, what happened with us there, the last eruption, is it laid out a nice little layer of ash and fertilized everything, the the trees, the grasses, everything just came back incredibly healthy. And, you know, in a forest, without that, a lot of times will die.
Well, you know, there's talk about Yellowstone going big time, and there, you know, it could be a disaster if that thing goes.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, we could turn a lot of this around because we have the technologies now. They have devices they can put on the fuel before it's burned that changes it on a molecular structure, that what comes out of your exhaust is oxygen and water. There's other fuelless energy devices right now, the electric cars. There's ways of beefing those up. But the technology's here to stop the pollution. The problem is that until the people rise up and demand these technologies come forward, it's not going to happen. And if they don't rise up and make these changes, this civilization is in very dire straits.
Let's go to our first-time caller. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, this is Ted.
Hello. Ted, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from North Georgia Mountain.
Well, welcome to the show.
Okay. I have a question for James. He hit on a few things, different dimensions and also phenomena under the ground, supposedly possibly aliens living under the ground or something like that. I had an interesting experience happened to myself and a friend who's now teaches archaeology at University of Florida.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, he wanted to go out to a shell mound that the Indians built, you know, to get artifacts, and I wanted to go hunting. And we stopped where the old Spanish brick road used to go through west of Beulah Plantation. And as we were walking out to actually it's Cocaina Quarry where the shell mound's at.
Yeah.
We heard it sound like somebody building a cabin beating on a tin roof. And somebody's building a cabin way out there. And we walked out to the shell mound, and I went deer hunting and came back and helped Jim pick up the stuff he wanted to bring back. We kept hearing the sound. The ship was growing louder. It was exactly the sound like somebody putting a tin roof on something. Well, the sound kept getting closer to us, and we got to a fork in the trail. And one fork went to the right. That's where we parked the Jeep at. And we were going to go down there. Well, sound went, it seemed like it was above ground, but it went, it didn't, it came right across the trail, didn't move any branches. We were in palm fronds. And we were still standing at where the fork started. So we ran over. We could hear the sound coming between the forks, okay? We ran. Jim stood on one side of it, and I stood on the other side of it. And it seemed like the sound was above ground, just a little bit above ground, and kept going through the pond. Went right across the road in front of us.
Was the sound very close to what you just heard me play tonight?
I don't think so. It sounded like really, somebody putting on a tin roof. But it was either at ground level or just above the ground. And went right between us. We were both carrying guns. We had absolutely no fear. It was just, we're not believing this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, later on, I met a girl in the land. She's from Casadega. And she was Romanian. She professed to be a gypsy. And I told her about it. And she said, I heard my grandmother talk about something like that. And, a couple weeks later, I met her, and she said, you know, I talked to my grandmother about that, and she said, it was the devil traveling underground. She said, there's people that live under the ground. And I didn't think too much about it. Well, about 3 years ago, I was bear hunting up in British Columbia, and I was talking to one of the Indian guides, and he wasn't surprised at all. He says, you know, he says, a lot of our people have heard the same thing. What that is the spirit traveling through the woods.
Did you ever hear that, James?
I have heard that. I've heard very similar things of that nature. I heard that in Denver, actually, Colorado, once. And what's funny is I saw a spear that accompanied that. And it seemed to me, when I saw it, it looked like a technology, almost like a man-made technology. And whatever this thing was, it could move through things.
You don't think they're underground UFO bases?
That particular thing that I saw, I think it's part of our own back-engineered stuff that they use to, kind of play with, you might say, gather information.
All right, well, stay with us. James Gilliland, my guest, will be back. We'll continue to take your phone calls next hour. By the way, don't forget tomorrow night, a little treat for everyone. Streamlinking, of course, chat with me. tomorrow, 8 o'clock Pacific time, or 10 o'clock Central, or 11 o'clock Eastern time. But also, you're going to be able to chat if you're not a StreamLink member. I give you an opportunity to do that. So on the website, coasttocoastam.com, you'll find where Lex has some instructions on how to visit the chat page. So take advantage of that and fire away when I'm there at my computer.
Is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George Norrie toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Indeed, with you and your phone calls as we continue chatting with James Gilliland and some of his experiences out there at Trout Lake in Washington. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm George Norrie, James Gilliland, my guest. Jim, we have not really touched on in depth the Bethlehem ship. Tell me a little bit about that before we take some more calls.
Oh, that was pretty incredible. Another one that happened, another sighting. The shortly after the plasma ship, you know, that I filmed where it shows all the fields of energy around the ship,
mm-hmm.
and looks like a giant Tesla ball up there. I was woken up about 4:30 in the morning. It was just about a week ago, actually, and my whole body was vibrating, and I knew the ships were there, and so I grabbed my camera and came outside, and it started coming over the sanctuary from one side, and I just lifted up the camera and put it on it as it was coming over, and it was pretty low. It was very low. And I asked it, you can hear in the background, I'm asking the ship to power it up, to light it up. And I was going, please, I said, light it up, you know, light it up, because I wanted some real good footage showing the energy displays off of these ships. And as it came over, it just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger and more brilliant and threw off an incredible blue and white light off of this ship. And it's just enormous. And as it was going over, it was so brilliant, it just looked like a giant star. And in the camera, as I was filming, at its brightest moment, it sent off this flash that looked like a cross in the center of it. And so that's how it got the nickname, you know, the Bethlehem ship, because that's what it looked like. It was just enormous.
Let's go to some more calls. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with James Gilliland. Hi there.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I had the privilege of listening in to Art Bell when he had Father Malachi Martin on.
Yes.
And at one time, Art Bell asked Father Malachi Martin what he thought of all this alien activity and so forth, and Father Malachi Martin's answer was that it was demonic activity. And I certainly would be inclined to agree with Father Malachi Martin that all this is truly demonic activity.
But I'm not sure if it's entirely all demonic activity.
Is there any of these people that have, there is not one little tiny bit of evidence that would stand up in a court of law? Is there any place in
all this evidence?
Huh?
There's a mountain of evidence.
It would stand up in a court of law.
Easily. It would be. We have a mountain of evidence ourselves that anybody with any reasonable mind...
Witness testimony stands
up in a court
of law. We have
about 2,500 witnesses right now that have seen the ships. We've got probably 30 hours of footage. We've got nuclear physicists, plasma physicists, aerospace engineers, design engineers, professional photographers. We have, Steve Marino with TSI Applications did some in-depth investigation of the area, of the history of the UFO activity. We've got the tribal police on record. We've got the forest rangers, the fire tower spotters. Spar Giedemann got the fire tower spotters and the tribal police on record. There's so much evidence here. We've even had John Alexander here with NIDS come up and they saw the ships. Just the amount of footage and the evidence that we have is so overwhelming. I mean, any reasonable mind would have to agree that this is definitely a done deal. I mean, how many witnesses do you need? How much footage do you need? How much footage along with the witnesses in the background talking, you know, screaming as these ships come in, do you need before you realize this is a real thing? Now, as far as the demonic aspect of it, there's another woman on your show, I believe, that talked about that was saying all the UFOs are demons. If that's the case, why is there so many frescoes with UFOs painted in them all throughout the churches in Europe, and they're called, you know, the Annunciation, the Baptism, the Crucifixion? All of these events have undeniable UFOs, and we have those on our site. The UFOs are all throughout the Bible. They talk about the sweet energies of the Pleiades and the Orion energies, and they in Amos and Job. The ship Ezekiel saw was a shiny disc-like metallic object. He said it had bronze feet like calves. It had fire and brimstone coming out from underneath it. When it landed, it sounded like 1,000 rushing rivers. And out of that ship came the cherubim, which were wheels within wheels with flashing lights all around them. And the Tibetan scriptures talk about it. The Hindu scriptures, they say there's over 400,000 other forms of life out there, humanoid forms of life in the universe. And they have ships from that go from metallic craft to energy to pure light spheres, you might say, vehicles. So these ships are in every culture, in the oldest parts of each culture, and if people actually did their homework and checked out, these frescoes on these ancient, you know, church walls, well, they're from 14th to 17th century frescoes, they would realize that we have a very, very rich history of UFO activity that have interfaced with humanity since, you know. Actually, one of the cave paintings is 7,500 years old.
I mean, some of those paintings are just so strange to be able to see an actual UFO in the background.
Exactly.
I mean, and clearly it's a flying machine.
Exactly. You know, and you know, Billy Graham actually called them God's other angels, and the Vatican said these are not to be seen as demonic. So. I don't know where these people are getting their information from. I don't, you know, there's a lot of of fear out there, and people that don't really have the capability to go into interdimensional mind and experience these beings for themselves. So they're talking with, you know, dark, you might say dark age mentality or knowledge. And it's time to do the research and do the education and see that these have always been a very strong part in our ancient history. And there's some very spiritual events that are recorded that have a lot to do with these UFOs, as our ancient ancestors, all of these great temples.
James, did they ever tell you if we were seated by them?
Yes, yes. Basically what happened, the Earth history is not like we're being taught. The Earth, the human experience here goes back almost 28 million years.
I was going to say, don't say we're only 6,000 years old now.
No, it goes back 28 million years old. And those were the ancient Lyrians, which were the first ones that came to the Earth and colonized the Earth. And unfortunately, they were a little warlike at the time, and they clashed and they kind of did each other in. But
sounds like we take after them, huh?
Exactly. We have a lot of that seed. But the second attempt was the Atlantis and Lemurian colonies. And those were the peaceful Lyrians that fled to the Pleiades, the Hades, and Orion system. And then from there they came to Earth, Mars, and Melona or Maldek, depends on what culture you refer to. And so what happened there is on the second phase, the planet Maldek was blown to pieces, and it's now our asteroid belt because of a war that broke out on Maldek. And it stripped the atmosphere off of Mars and threw it out of its cradle orbit. And it didn't affect the Earth because the Earth was on the other side of the sun. So that's why, you know, Hoagland's talked a lot about the pyramids on Mars, the ancient structures.
Yes.
And all the underground things they're seeing there.
Indeed.
And so, I mean, there was a very advanced race of beings that did have a civilization on Mars a long time ago. And our asteroid belt is the planet that was blown up, and unfortunately that happened again with Atlantis and Lemuria. A great war broke out there.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air with James Gilliland. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes.
Glad you're back.
Thank you.
Anyway, James, you sound very sincere. Mm-hmm. I've seen a UFO when I was 13. I just have a couple questions real fast.
Sure.
Okay. First of all, have you asked the ETs to explain their first beginning, by whom they were made, like God, etc.? And when you meditate or try to summon them, do you do the prayer and meditation or just one? And the third thing is that in the Bible, you were speaking about the Bible, and it sounds like you're pretty good with that, the atmosphere, it does say in the Bible that Satan is under heaven and has control of the atmosphere around the earth. And I'll hang up as you try to, you know, I like listening to you. I like to hear some of the answers to that.
All right. Well, James, I guess, first of all, how do you summon? Do you summon at all?
No.
Do you bring them to you, or do they just show up?
It's pretty much an automatic. There's a telepathic connection that's automatic. They're just a thought away. So they will tell me also when they're in the area. I've actually had camera crews waiting there, and I tell them the exact time and location while they're aiming their cameras, and the ships have appeared on film, and we have all that, you know, on film with, you know, the ships appearing, and it's very well documented. So it shows there is a telepathic contact or pre-knowledge of the ships when they come in. The I was trying to remember her other question was the first question.
Well, the last one, she was talking about the devil and its relationship.
Yeah. The thing about what we don't understand or what we don't know, we fear. And unfortunately, we have two categories we put things in. The unknown and what we fear or what we deem as negative goes into the devil category. And what we do know and what we're told or whatever by whatever programming we went through is in, you know, the good or angel category. But the problem is that it's such a small way of looking at the universe is only as big as the mind that can perceive it. So there's a lot of areas in between, just like there's many levels of heaven when you go and leave this plane. The level you go to matches your consciousness or your vibration or your frequency. So there's a vibrational continuum, and just like we have this physical body, there's other beings that have more of an energy body, you might say. Other beings have more of a light body. There's other beings that have more of pure consciousness. And we have all those bodies within us. We're not just a physical body and a personality. And so when you understand this and you start moving up into more expanded states of awareness, you might say, you expand in consciousness along this vibrational continuum and you start meeting these other beings. Now, most of my...
Is it easy for you to summon or for them to show up?
Yes, it's very easy, but in doing so, when they come, they scan the area, they scan the consciousness of the group, and if there's a lot of fear and a lot of judgment, a lot of disharmony, or the energies aren't right, they just move on. They stay very high and they don't come down. Now, if we have a really unified group with pure intentions and they're harmonious, then the ships come closer and they drop down lower. So most of the ones I've experienced have been benevolent. They pretty much take the high road. I've even seen the military bring out toys and fire on them, and they just don't react. They never fire back. They just shield up and just keep going.
What about capture? Have they ever gobbled up a plane or a boat or anything like we saw in Close Encounters?
You know, I've never seen that. We actually have footage of jets chasing these UFOs, and what happens is they just either, you know, speed up a little bit and just leave the plane in the dirt or the jet in the distance.
Leave them in the dust.
Or basically what we've seen, which is very funny, is I had a telepathic contact with one of the Palladians, and by the name of Blagie, which is a female, and her ship was hovering right over the sanctuary, and these jets started coming in on her, and they completely changed course, and they had the afterburners just going. And when I saw her ship, I was communicating with her. I said, can they harm you, even with any of our back-engineered weapons or whatever, can they harm you in any way? And she said, no. She said, we're far too advanced for that. And as the jet came in on her, it was really interesting. She just blinked out. Her ship was there 1 minute, and it was gone.
So did they cloak themselves, or did they actually disappear from the scene?
I think they just jump a dimension or whatever. They just jump out of this dimension or this
into frequency. The wormhole or whatever.
Yeah. And it just disappears, and the jet goes by, and then she reappeared, and she flew right up that jet's tailpipe. And it was amazing. And then the ship kind of... as she was flying towards the jet, the ship just became a light principle, went over the jet, and kept going. And I would give anything to hear this pilot's testimony as to what happened.
I'd love to, the transmission would have been worth it.
Oh, yeah, it would have been incredible. But I've seen over and over again that these beings are so far superior, and they just take the high road. They're very evolved. And they're waiting for us to stop acting as primitives. And when we do, and we greet them as ambassadors without fear and anger and judgment and condemnation, they will come and interface with us and assist us in our evolutionary process.
Let's go to our first-time caller. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. Is it me?
It is you.
There is me. Anyway, I wanted to ask Dr. James, I saw a... huge effect going on when I was going down to Carlsbad Caverns, and it was a UFO going back and forth in a triangle area, and it kept going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and that kind of really just tripped me out, and I totally believe in what's going on with this situation. And the other question I wanted to ask was, what do the aliens have to do, if they have anything towards this Earth, with environmental protection, trying to save the rainforest or anything else?
All right. As far as the back and forth movement, of course, obviously, if there is something unidentified, they're going to make all kinds of strange movements. But, I mean, like you say, though, they don't get involved in trying to save us. so they really can't protect the environment, or can they?
Well, they can. They can, and they want to. But they have, you know, what they call, you know, some people call it the prime directive. There's all these different names for it. It's up to us. If we invite them and ask them for help, they can. Otherwise, they have a non-interference policy.
What do you mean we ask them? Like a United Nations request or what?
Yes, if we, as a United Planet, you might say, or just, you know, the listeners on your show, if enough people asked and went within and said, you know, we want help and we want to turn this planet around and we'd like to, you know, assistance in this, you'll start seeing a lot more activity in the skies and they'll be showing themselves a lot more. So they can't interfere on free will and self-determination. It's part of the universal principles that they live by.
It's the universal law, isn't it?
Exactly.
All right, stay with us. James Gilliland, your phone calls. I'm George Norrie. And yes, this is Coast to Coast AM.
To talk with George Norrie toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free 1-800-618-8255. International callers may call George Norrie by reaching the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
We're going to have a little fun on our next Coast to Coast program. My big guest will be Gary Pratt. He's the founder of Treehouse Consulting. Think about that for a moment. But we're going to talk about some really mind-blowing technologies that'll be around for all future generations. And Gary sent me some things to start experimenting with already, including just weird things, but I'll talk about that tomorrow on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, James, would you direct people to my website where we have some various clips there and just kind of explain them? Of course, we've talked about the UFO sound clip, which is clip number two. Dawn validation. Tell me a little bit about that. What is that?
The dawn you know, unfortunately, I don't have a computer because I'm on the road.
Okay, so you don't know the order I've put them?
Yeah.
Okay, this one has to do with an aerial object lighting up upon your request. You simply call it, and it's done.
Uh-huh.
It's in QuickTime. It's a QuickTime movie clip that we've got up.
Yeah, there's several of those that we've had where they come up, and we'll I'm not exactly sure which ones that you grabbed. Unfortunately, I don't have access to computer.
Actually,
I'm in your neck of the woods right now.
Right.
But I know we have several of them that lighted up and threw out incredible amounts of energy on command. And we've had as many as 60 witnesses watching these ships as they come in. We get the readouts from the Heavens Above website to tell us where all the satellites are, and the actually the mirror's gone now, but the space, you know, the station and the shuttle, we know exactly where everything is. And we've had some people come up there with very high clearances that know where the other satellites are that we're not supposed to know about. So we do a lot of cross-checking to make sure there's no known object there at the time.
Yeah, and I think that has a live narration by you as well.
Mm-hmm.
On that. Have you noticed, I've got to ask you this, because not only do you live out there in the woods area, in the rural area,
But,
I mean, associated with some of these sightings, do you ever see anything that you could have said might have been a Bigfoot?
Well, actually, there's you've had some guests, I believe a psychologist, that saw Bigfoot, and he's doing a lot of research in the area. That's right in our backyard.
Yes.
Actually, we're looking right up at the mountain. To the left of the mountain is where they're doing that research.
Scared the heck out of him, by the way.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of sightings in the area. I think there's an Institute of Science or something, I think, to put a thick booklet out of interviewing a lot of people in the area that have all had their sightings. And what's interesting is that a lot of these people are professional people from all walks of life, and the object that they described all had, you know, similar characteristics. They all said it didn't really have a neck. It had a very large head. These beings are extremely large. And you know, all the down to the details, they all gave very clear descriptions of these Bigfoot.
I tell you, they look like Chewie from Star Wars, don't they?
Yeah, they do. A lot of the Native Americans, they know all about them. They just say it's another nation. You know, it's but what they say there is that when they get too far away from the land and out of touch with spirit, that the Bigfoot starts appearing to them.
Let's go to some phones before we get all jammed up here. Wildcard line, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Jim, I'm out in Philadelphia.
Hi, Jim.
I have to say, wow, I'm a little bit jealous, but it's amazing that that James has had so many sightings. I constantly look up in the sky. And
I know, I'm envious of you, too.
I've never seen anything. It's a little bright out here where I live, so there's never any sightings as far as I know, anyway. But my question was, I think years ago when I was a kid, the old TV show In Search Of, I think it was Leonard Nimoy, the host.
Great show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They did an episode on the Earth's natural energy and the natural energy belts that travel around the Earth and points on the Earth where they cross. They refer to them as vortexes, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been out to Sedona, Arizona, and I believe there's a vortex out there as well. It's a pretty amazing place.
It is a powerful place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, points where these energy belts cross, you know, two or more, there seems to be significant landmarks, such as the pyramids, you know, Easter Island, Stonehenge. And my question was, are these places significant in relation to ET sightings, and do they have anything to do with them?
Yes, they do. Actually, they seem to be dimensional doorways or portals in these areas where these there's one just you know, I think it's just to the north of our place where you can actually watch the clouds form and creates a major tornado effect in this area where there's a very large vortex. But we see the ships come in. We actually have photographs of these ships appearing in these vortexes, and they start out, it looks like a square cloud, like a pillar cloud. And all of a sudden, the cloud will get bigger and bigger and widen out, and the next thing you know, there's a ship sitting there.
Are there lights behind it at all if it happens to roll in at night?
Yes, there are. Yeah, there's some brilliant lights. I have some amazing footage of a ship following a jetliner. and it was taken outside the window by the same person that filmed the ship over Portland State University. And this ship is a golden disc-shaped ship, and the amazing thing about it, it starts morphing, and it turns into this giant pillar of light. And we have the whole thing on film, and then it shapeshifts into an arrowhead. It looks just like an arrowhead in the sky. And then it shapeshifts again into a hand. And the way the hand looks, it's held, it's the exact symbol, Hebrew symbol for God. And it's just amazing because you see an arrowhead and you see these bright pillars of light, which go into Greek mythology, and the, you know, and then you hear about the Bible, the pillar clouds that were a fire by night. So it seemed like they were trying to show us a message that they've been a part of our ancient history since the beginning, and they have incredible technologies, you know, that they display that show very clearly they're not, you know, anything that we've created here on Earth.
Okay, I had a caller back called you doctor, by the way. You're not a doctor.
No, I'm not a doctor.
All right, let's go west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Yes, hi, good evening, James. Good evening, George. Thank you for taking my call.
You are welcome.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. James, I have a question for you. As an artist and photographer, I of course look at the emotive and emotional side of things. And in all of this conversation tonight, I've heard a lot about technology, a lot about science. But you know, have they ever talked about anything else? I mean, like, you mentioned the girl that you had the woman alien. Mm-hmm. I mean, why don't they sit down on the couch and, you know, have a cooler and talk about what's going on?
Like we do.
I mean, isn't there any kind of... is our higher level to get to them technology only? Isn't there any kind of form of intercourse? And I mean that exactly the way I'm saying it.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I haven't had that experience. I've heard other people have. But my own experience with them is I feel incredible love and incredible compassion from them. The experience I've seen have been, I would say, intently on a more spiritual level, you know, a much higher level. The one caller asked me that one question. She said, do they believe in God or a creator? And they do, but they see it differently. They do believe there is a creator, you might say, and they see creation, you know, the creator within all creation, and they serve creation. They've evolved to a very high level of existence, you might say, where they're just in full service mode. But I was talking to them on, you know, base things, like one of Blaji, which I connected with, was extremely beautiful. And, you know, the first thing I asked was, I was so enamored by the love and the connection that was going on. I asked her, I said, you know, is there a possibility that, you know, we might be able to, you know, hook up and
James,
have a relationship or something of that nature? Because I knew that they were, they're not judgmental in any way, but I was just asking on a more informational level, like, say, hey, well, what would happen, you know, if we got together? And she said, she basically told me that, you know, I wasn't ready for that.
It's like the movie Cocoon.
Yeah, the energy exchange was a little too intense, and I'm still holding on to some primitive beliefs.
It's like kissing a taser.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Before the break, we had answered two of the previous callers' three questions. Mm-hmm. The other question she wanted to know was, have these beings ever talked to you about a creator?
Oh, yeah, definitely they have. And they said there is. It's just not what we... It's not a little old man with a beard, you know, that's going to throw lightning bolts at people that don't follow certain doctrines or whatever. What they explained to me is that God doesn't possess an ego, and it's more like the sun. It shines its light on everyone, everything, and we choose how much of that we want to accept. And there is an intelligence, a supreme intelligence, whatever you want to call it. It's within everyone. It's the spark that's within everyone, and we can ignite that spark into the full flame and become one you know, with the source, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, people say that's blasphemy. Well, it's not. It's really what Jesus prayed for, because he's one of his prayers, he said, "Beloved Father, let them become one as we have become one." So he became one in consciousness. He merged his consciousness with the one consciousness, you know, that encompasses all consciousness on all planes and all dimensions throughout the multiverses. He became one with that.
So somewhere along the line, they realize somebody jump-started everything.
Exactly. And they believe, you know, that, you know, they have their form of, I wouldn't say religion, but it's more of, it's almost where science and religion have merged. It's a divine science, you might say. They understand.
Well, that would be interesting to see if and when that ever happens. Let's go to our wildcard line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Oh, yeah, hi. I'd like to ask, why don't flying saucers ever land? And that flying saucer you're talking about, where is it now? Why doesn't it meet the media, the mayor, you know, the mass media?
Or even come down on this show, for crying out loud.
Or stop in L.A. And stay. Why don't they ever land?
Why not? Why don't they want to be that kind of publicity?
My guess is they don't. They never land because they don't exist.
Well, let's find out. Jim, give us your shot on that.
Well, you know, my answer to him is get himself a nice little spaceship and fly over and land on the White House lawn and see what happens to him. Or fly over a Navy base or fly over anywhere and see what happens to him. The way we greet these beings is we send our military up, we fire on them, we try to shoot these ships down, we try to steal their technology and use it in the war industry. So as long as we're going to act as primitive on these occasions, the only people they are going to contact are people that have risen to the occasions, you know, people that are on the outskirts, you might say, that are not part of the primitive behavior that they get greeted with. So, you know, if they come, it's undeniable. We have tons of footage of this. There's no point in coming and landing until we stop acting a lot more, you know, a lot less primitive, you might say, because it's no purposeful good in it, you might say.
West of the Rockies, your turn. You're on with James Gilliland. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. Where are you calling from?
Missoula, Montana.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I wanted to ask your guest, he said something about planet Maldek, which exploded and became the asteroid belt, and there was an ancient civilization there. And then he mentioned something about Hoagland, too, and I was wondering if his source, was it from his research that he comes up with this exploded planet and ancient civilization, or is it directly from them?
It's directly from them, but it's also been backed up by research. And a lot of the ancient texts talk about these things.
Oh, do you have some names that I could look up on, you know, some books? Or?
Yeah, a lot of the Sitchin books talk about it. Zachariah Sitchin talks a lot about these ancient events, that they came from Sumerian tablets there's a lot of, I think even some of the old books, Plato talked about the ancient Atlantis, and there is, if you talk to some of some of the yogis and some of the lamas, the ones that really know the ancient scriptures and texts, they talk all about this, you know, these ancient civilizations and great wars and things of that nature, so... It kind of all tied in together, and it also was corroborated by other people who are having contacts that are receiving the same information. So it came from a lot of different sources and was continuously... that's the way truth is. You usually hear it three or four times. It just doesn't come once. And you're guided to other people, other research, and whatever you need when you're on this path.
Do you think Adam and Eve were space travelers?
The Adam and Eve basically were, I wouldn't say so much space travelers. There was a lot of genetic tinkering, you know, in the past. There was a human being, like kind of a human being that was evolving naturally on the Earth. And it was very primitive. It was a knuckle dragger. It was like the Neanderthal man.
And there's no telling how far it would have advanced.
Yeah, and it got, you know, it got a genetic jump for to serve, you know, some purposes of some other beings that were a lot more advanced. But a lot of people look at that as a victim role, but, you know, the bottom line is that it's always evolving. That particular being that they jumped up genetically continued to evolve over the million years, and you know, the DNA lines, everything, they're always evolving. People think we have all this junk DNA and it's useless in us, and we're only using 2 strands and maybe 20 codons activated.
I think if we got it, we're using it for something.
Yeah, well, we've got actually 13 strands of DNA, and we start activating these other strands of DNA, these other attributes start happening. You start developing the regeneration gene, you know, that comes in and starts regenerating the body. Another one activates the telepathic abilities. Another one generates the ability to see the future and back and forward in time. There's all of these things that actually align with the DNA, and this DNA can be activated and is being activated in many ways. It can be done both technologically, it can be done spiritually as well.
James, the clock is ticking. I want to know if your books are available and where they can obtain them.
Yeah, the books are best to go through our site. The books and the videos, we have the ships we've talked about on the videos. We have some of the technologies that we've talked about. The water technology, you can click on AquariusWater.org on our site and go right to the super oxygenated water technologies. But it's all there on our site. The books can also be ordered through just about any store should be able to get the books. If they can't get it, go ahead and just, you know, check out on the website. One of the other things, too, we're also having a major gathering at the First Congregational Church in Portland, Oregon.
Portland, when is that, real quickly?
It's on the October 21st, Tuesday, and it's 1126 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland, Oregon.
All right, a lot of people in Portland listening to Coast on KEX.
We've got a free email list, too. People can sign up on the site, and that tells them exactly what the next events are going to be, you know, happening up at the ranch.
Excellent. We'll do it. Thanks, James. Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, the webmaster, Barbara Simpson, always Art Bell. Thanks again to Art for taking Thursday and Friday for me last week. Do appreciate that. Always good to hear the message.